where you are, Nick Reinberger is my name. As we've been hearing, a lot of the dysfunction in our political systems, whether it's local or state or national or even any of the international arguments we see around the world, come down to people having arguments. Now, arguments are not necessarily a bad thing. If you've ever studied philosophy at university, as I did for a year at the University of Tasmania, that's what you do. And you spend a lot of time spotting fallacious arguments and looking for actual evidence. And haven't I been banging on for years about the need for a new political party which deals with nothing but evidence and not really with any of these other spurious arguments and cultural arguments we get into. We're going to talk about the ethics of arguing and how to argue reasonably and factually and respectfully. And most of that is about spotting fallacious arguments. You should go, oh, no, that's not evidence. That's just a fallacious argument. You know, that's a straw man argument. That is a referral to authority, for instance. Do you know what all these things are? Well, we're going to talk a bit more about that with one of our local philosophers in just a minute, right after this.
I'd like to have an argument, please.
Certainly, sir. Have you been here before?
No, I haven't. This is my first time.
I see. Well, do you want to have just one argument, or were you thinking of taking a course?
Well, what is the cost?
Well, it's £1 for a 5-minute argument, but only £8 for a course of 10.
Well, I think it would be best if I perhaps started off with just the one and then see how it goes.
Fine. Well, I'll see who's free at the moment. Mr. DeBakey's free, but he's a little bit conciliatory. Ah, yes. Try Mr. Barnard, room 12.
Thank you.
What do you want?
Well, I was told outside that...
Don't give me that, you snotty-faced heap of parrot droppings.
What?
Shut your festering gob, you tit. Your type really makes me puke, you vacuous, coffee-nosed, malodorous pervert.
Look, I came here for an argument. I'm not going to just...
Oh, I'm sorry, but this is abuse.
Oh, I see. Well, that explains...
Oh, yes. You want room 12A, just along the corridor.
Oh, thank you very much. Sorry.
Not at all.
Thank you.
Stupid kid.
Come in.
Is this the right room for an argument?
I've told you once.
No, you haven't.
Yes, I have.
When?
Just now.
No, you didn't.
I did.
Didn't.
I'm telling you, I did.
You did not.
Oh, I'm sorry, just one moment. Is this a 5-minute argument or the full half hour?
Oh, just the 5 minutes.
Ah, thank you. Anyway, I did.
You most certainly did not.
Look, let's get this thing clear. I quite definitely told you.
No, you did not.
Yes, I did.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
You didn't.
Did.
Well, look, this isn't an argument.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't. It's just contradiction.
No, it isn't.
It is.
It is not.
Look, you just contradicted me.
I did not.
Oh, you did.
No, no, no.
You did just then.
Nonsense.
Oh, this is futile.
No, it isn't.
I came here for a good argument.
No, you didn't. No, you came here for an argument.
Well, an argument isn't just contradiction.
Can be.
No, it can't. An argument is a connected series of statements intended to establish a proposition.
It isn't.
Yes, it is. It's not just contradiction.
Look, if I argue with you, I must take up a contrary position.
Yes, but that's not just saying no, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't. Argument is an intellectual process. Contradiction is just the automatic gainsaying of any statement the other person makes.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
Not at all.
Now, look.
Good morning.
What?
That's it. Good morning.
I was just getting interested.
Sorry, 5 minutes is up.
That was never 5 minutes.
I'm afraid it was.
It wasn't.
I'm sorry, but I'm not allowed to argue anymore.
What?
If you want me to go on arguing, you'll have to pay for another 5 minutes.
Yes, but that was never 5 minutes just now. Oh, come on. Look, this is ridiculous.
I'm sorry, but I'm not allowed to argue unless you've paid.
Oh, all right.
Thank you.
Well,
what?
That wasn't really 5 minutes just now.
I told you, I'm not allowed to argue unless you've paid.
I just paid.
No, you didn't.
I did.
No, you didn't.
Look, I don't want to argue about
that. Well, you didn't pay.
Aha. If I didn't pay, why are you arguing? I've got you.
No, you haven't.
Yes, I have. If you're arguing, I must have paid.
Not necessarily. I could be arguing in my spare time.
Oh, I've had enough of this.
No, you haven't.
Oh, shut up. I want to complain.
You want to complain? Look at these shoes. I've only had them 3 weeks and the heels are worn right through.
No, I want to complain
If you complain, nothing happens. You might as well not bother.
Oh.
And my back hurts and we're having a fine day and I'm sick and tired of this office.
Hello, I want to...
Oh! No. Hold your head like this. Then go, wow. Try it again.
Whoa!
Better, but wow. Put your hand there.
No.
Now.
Wow!
Oh, good, that's it.
Stop hitting me.
What?
Stop hitting me.
Stop hitting you?
Yes.
Why'd you come in here?
I wanted to complain.
Oh, no, that's next door. It's being hit on the head lessons in here.
What a stupid concept.
Once again, Monty Python make great radio. They do great audio stories. But there's some proper intellectual information in that, as there was in a lot of Monty Python stuff. An argument is a connected series of statements intended to establish a proposition. It is an intellectual process. So, should we get some sort of training for those people whose lives depend on argument, that is, our politicians, in what arguing actually should be? Dan Hutto is a philosophy professor at the University of Wollongong and joins us now here at ABC Illawarra. G'day, Dan. How are you going?
G'day. How are you going, Nick?
When you're a young philosophy student, maybe in your first year, do you teach them how to argue? How do you go about that?
We do, in fact, in a number of places. And students, one of the courses that we have up and running, a course called Wisdom, Truth and Reason, actually makes use of the very sketch you just played.
Excellent.
And it does so partly because, as you just said, there's a sort of attempted definition of what an argument is, and Monty Python aren't bad at this at all, right? I mean, it isn't just an automatic gainsaying of another person's claims, right? Or you can, might say, yes, it is, but I'll stop you with the pantomime version. And we'll hold back and say, look, you know, of course we use rhetoric and argumentation all the time in our everyday lives, as you say, politicians, business people, anyone attempting to justify a position. So we use it for lots of different purposes in science, sometimes for pure contemplative reasoning, but we use it in public life a lot too. And so actually mastering the art of detecting whether an argument is good or bad could in some sense be a personal pursuit or a personal virtue, but it's also got a social dimension that's greatly important to us. It justifies our reasons for taking certain kinds of actions, especially when that might even be a collective end. So it's very important for us to make the right decisions about important topics. I guess that's where you were gesturing at. But I mean, the topic of the moment will be things like how do we integrate our science in decision making about policy, about things like how to handle an epidemic.
Now, there's a lot of different forms of fallacious argument where you can say to someone, no, that makes no sense, or that's not logical, or that's not evidence. We probably don't have time to go through all of them. But no. One of them which comes up again and again, particularly in politics, is what's called ad hominem, which is to attack someone personally rather than their policy or their evidence. How can you spot that, and why is that a failure as an argument?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's not even addressing the argument. So there are multiple forms of argumentation where, and a related one, by the way, the straw man fallacy is the same thing as a famous fallacy, where you're just not getting towards, you're not listening to what the person's saying at all, right? So you're not even evaluating the argument. You may have come, so one of the obvious problems with this, as anyone can see, is that if you're not engaging in a sensible debate, you're just coming to critique the individual, right? Mm-hmm. As you try and get to
you're a member of a union, therefore you've got a vested interest, therefore we should listen to nothing that you say. I mean, that's essentially attacking your associations rather than the evidence or the logic of what you're saying.
Well, that's right. I mean, there's a couple of things I would say about this. I mean, it's really interesting. You exactly picked it up. The associationism is a kind of psychological trait that's very strong with us. This is why advertisers know it, right? So we tend to evaluate things based on associations. But of course, logic steps at one level above that. We're not interested in the mere associations of things when we're trying to evaluate whether it's a good idea to do X or Y, yeah, whatever that outcome is. We might want to stand back and think, what are the grounds for thinking this? And this is, of course, what happens in politics where people want to become more bipartisan, right? You put aside the politics. Ad hominem attacks, of course, as you say, may strike at the properties of an individual. Now, that could be something that you could turn into an argument, but notice how different it is to raise that in an argumentative form. So you might say something like, "We," and then you can see more credibly whether you believe this. "We need our political leaders to be morally perfect. X is not morally perfect, therefore X should not be one of our political leaders." That's an actual valid argument, but you might challenge the premises. You might think asking moral excellence or moral perfection of anybody is too much. So there are different ways that you can, spot these things. But interestingly, I think it's actually familiarity that you require. So they become relatively easy to spot if you're on the lookout for them. And if you're used to the idea that you're going to be, if you're on guard for the fact that you might be hit with arguments that are fallacious.
We see that in slogans a lot. In fact, one I was talking about with Chaz from Planet America this morning, there are T-shirts being printed now, and forgive me for saying this, but it says, "Say no to Joe and the Ho."
Mm-hmm.
They don't even name Kamala Harris, and already they're just insulting her. And so it's got nothing to do with policy, and that's essentially an ad hominem or a personal attack, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, look, it's very common. I mean, there's, as you say, a whole variety that aren't just the, I mean, the politics tends to descend to the lowest level to this kind of engagement, rather than standing back and actually not to our benefit, not focusing on serious policies and looking at perhaps their prospects in a rounded way, right? I mean, that's what we kind of hope for from our political leaders. But usually, at least when they're campaigning, they tend to go for these more rhetorical tactics, mm-hmm. as we know. But that's just a very common era. The bigger question is, why are we so susceptible to this? And the fact is, and this is an interesting line of research, is that, in fact, we're really not built as natural-born reasoners. So there used to be the idea that we kind of have, this is something I work on in philosophy of psychology, that we come equipped, as standard with reasoning mechanisms that enable us to do logic. But that's been questioned in recent times, really, really kind of fundamentally, and very much so on empirical grounds. People fail. First of all, there's a litany of both logical fallacies. Like you said, we could have gone through a list, the bandwagon fallacy, the appeal to authority fallacy, the false dilemma fallacy, the hasty generalization fallacy, right? The correlation causation fallacy, the anecdotal evidence fallacy, the middle ground fallacy, the burden of proof fallacy, and so on and so on. There's equally many cognitive biases that we have in our thinking, things like the confirmation bias and such like. So what that suggests is that we have to train pretty hard to get to be able to reason well and to detect poor reasoning, both in ourselves and in others.
I did philosophy at university, and it was life-changing for me.
Yeah.
But I wish it had been, I'd heard more about it earlier.
I think it's a,
Do you think ethics training does a bit of that within the school system? That's even at primary school. Do we need more education on this kind of discourse way earlier than the university did?
I certainly believe so. I mean, there are a number of organizations in Australia that are pushing for that. And I wish them well. I think that learning to think well is, this is a very ancient way of thinking. Just going back, as we were teaching this recently with Aristotle and others, that's the idea that is embedded in a lot of Greek thinking about what it is to be a good citizen, right? So actually developing strong reasoning capacities is part of what you need to have for the collective good, right? For the public good. And leaders in particular should demonstrate those intellectual virtues, right? And a whole range more. But ethics is usually thought to be separated from logic, right? You think of this as a strict training that might be something that you do separately.
So why would ethics be separate from logic? I would say that you couldn't figure out your own ethical framework or one for the country that would translate into law without dealing with it logically.
I tend to agree. But somehow these things get slightly compartmentalized. Yeah.
So
I tend to agree with that. And in fact, interestingly, we had a speaker last night who was just talking about the ethics of truth seeking for just that reason, right? How that's got to be central to our activities. Certainly in these domains, and certainly if then, and certainly the next one, if they don't come very naturally to us. I mean, there's been a new work. This I have in my hands a book called The Enigma of Reason, A New Theory of Human Understanding. It's a recent one that it's a very interesting new book that tries to compile all the empirical evidence around why we are so bad in general at reasoning. And the argument that the authors make is we just don't come equipped with a general domain, general capacity to reason well. This is a very specialized thing that we develop and that probably our reasoning.
Lao Tzu and Confucius, yes, and the Greeks really started, yeah, to formalize that. Would
well,
that be right?
Even that'd be true. They articulated it, but that turns out to be kind of like an ideal, not a descriptive psychological fact about us. Is the thought? Although I'd say that some of the Greeks. Authors did think we came equipped with natural capacities for reasoning. Aristotle did, for example. He thought we were natural born reasoners, and that was our special function.
I don't know about that. I think we're not that far away from the cave, frankly.
Well, that,
this very thin veneer of civilization upon us.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. So that's what the new empirical evidence suggests, that has to be adjusted. This isn't a, you know, when you look back on it, you think, if that idea was right, we should be much better at reasoning than we really are. We don't come equipped, so we have to work really hard at it. Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't. In fact, it means all the more reason, as you just said, for this is basically my return to your question. Should we be doing that earlier? Yes, I think. These are some of the most important possible skills that we, you know, we could have. And they're not something that are just going to develop naturally. So if we don't cultivate them, we're not likely to have them pervasively in our society, which is no good thing.
Yeah, Professor Dan Hutto is with us from the University of Wollongong's philosophy department. Just a quick mention of some traffic.
Traffic.
Gwynville on the Prince's Motorway near Memorial Drive. There are several vehicles involved in an accident. We've been told it might be four vehicles have crashed there. You need to exercise caution, and we'll get you more on that as soon as we can. All right, back to you, Dan Hutto. One of my favourite fallacies, or perhaps least favourite, is what they might call the appeal to ignorance, which is when someone says, well, you cannot prove that does not happen. I mean, people will say that about UFOs. Sure. They'll say that about, you know, the anti-vaxxers will bring that up. You know, you can't prove that it's harmless. You know, all you can do is appeal to the actual scientific evidence of millions of people and the statistics. You know, how often does that one come up?
It does come up. I mean, look, you have to be very careful with those, right? I mean, that's as if the fact that something has yet been proven to actually eliminate. Well, first of all, there's a lot to go into that. And one of them might be that we really don't find proofs of things that are for all time, even in the sciences, in the sense that, you know, mathematics and logic produce proofs. The sciences provide us with evidence and theorizing gets revised. But a preponderance of evidence, even if it doesn't prove something, doesn't give you good, you know, on reasonable grounds, a knockdown reason to reject it, right? So you might there be looking to something more like a different type of reasoning, like balance of probability, right? And so one of the things, too, is also to be bringing into our thinking statistical evidence and to think about probabilities, not just simple deductive logic. So there's a whole range of ways of reasoning that we have to be, you know, so if we're really evaluating, so this is a meta-level thing, right? As soon as you're metacognitively evaluating an argument, you also have to understand what types of arguments there can be. And that gets, you know, look, you can do this, as you know, you could specialize in this operation, but even the most minimal one to avoid the basic fallacies would be a huge uplift, if more people were acquainted with these fallacies and on guard against them, like I said. There's no easy way to spot them. And indeed, sometimes things go wrong in trying to reconstruct a person's simple argument, yeah, because they may not even have developed one. And so sometimes in conversation, people are making statements that aren't even arguments that you might need to fill out or they need to develop. And that can be done collectively. I mean, you can explore ideas with people to see whether or not you've got a reasonable ground for what you want to say. A little bit more of that rather than the reactionary pantomime that we heard jokingly presented by Michael Palin and John Cleese, right? Like, our conversations about these topics shouldn't reduce to that kind of pantomime antics.
And yet they do. Do you think this is, I mean, this is part of my philosophy or theory that we go back to this sort of cave person tribalism so easily, and we're seeing that in the US right now, and we see it in our politics and in our arguments about climate change and more over the place, and it's depressing.
I think it is depressing. I think my line on it, what I was just going to slightly more understated, I would have said it's disappointing. We could do much better than that. And, you know, what it takes, I guess, is maybe even, and here's your connection between the art of arguing and discourse and some ethics in this sense, right? One could develop a few good traits about how to behave in a friendly, civil manner to one another, right? So here's, in this respect, we teach the students a thing called Rappaport's rules. Rappaport's rules are that you always treat your opponent in any discussion more charitably than you would expect them to treat themselves. That's not easy. What numbers you're supposed to give, well, right, but that's just not out of pure kindness. It's about if you really want to evaluate what someone else is saying so that you can both collectively think about the outcome of that discussion, right? You want to hear the actual argument. So anything that gets in the way of that, if you start to think about why you're having the discussion in the first place at all, like there's not any point in having discussion if someone disagrees with you on any particular topic, whatever it is, politics, ethics, it doesn't really matter, or anything, science or what you will, but you simply are there to shut them down by taking the opposing view, as we saw in the gainsaying example, right?
Yeah.
That's what the joke of the Monty Python sketch. There's no point in having a conversation like that.
That's right? Very interesting, the Rappaport's rules, which I'd not heard of before, but I have heard it in a different context, which is in relationship counselling, one of the pieces of advice you get is always leave the other person with their dignity intact.
Well,
so you can say your piece, you can give your point of view, you can oppose someone, but you can leave them with their dignity intact. And that sounds like what you're teaching some of your students.
Well, we basically, yes, but it's more, it starts from an interestingly different place. It's not just about, it does leave everyone's dignity intact, as it happens. But it starts in the idea that you're in a collective endeavor to find something out.
Yes.
So actually, what happens...
Rather
than win. So yes, I start by thinking, you might have something important to tell me. You might be able to change my mind. I might not be thinking... So this starts with a little intellectual humility, right? I listen to you and I listen to what you have to say because I might learn something. And if I open my mind to that possibility, rather than to simply shutting you down, yeah... then I'm going to listen to your arguments. If I'm going to just there to shut you down, then all these fallacies are going to be, you know, easily animated.
Yeah,
but then you're just not, and you're not serving yourself or your collective end if you do that. So it's not about ethics in the sense of even the simple-minded ethics of what I owe to you, but it's what we owe to everyone, right? That it's just anyone.
The collective endeavor to come to a solution.
That's right. Why bother even entering into a discussion if you're actually going to argue in the other sense? If the argument in the other sense is just fisticuffs, verbal fisticuffs.
That's it. Dan, as always, it's been a pleasure not arguing with you. Thank you very much for chatting to me.
Yeah. Thanks for giving us the opportunity.
See you later. Dan Hutto, a professor of philosophy, University of Wollongong. Louise says, Nick, check out the New South Wales English curriculum.